As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, the show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, Chelsea toil at the Vicarage before Ziyech answers Tuchel's prayers. We preview Saturday's derby date at the London Stadium. A Chelsea legend joins us to look ahead to this week's FA Cup final. And lots more stuff about officially the best club in the world. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Tell you what, there's never a dull moment in the world of Chelsea Football Club, is there, listener? Plenty for us to sink our teeth into today. Later, we'll preview the Women's FA Cup final in the company of Chelsea legend Katie Chapman. Now, though, let me introduce two legends in their own households. From The Athletic, it's Simon Johnson.
Hello, I'm just wondering if you've got the right person again.
A bit generous,
I think my wife is downstairs. I'll just get her.
Your daughter says very nice things about you, at least. also with us today, Sam Parkin. Morning, Sam.
Morning, Matt. That's quite fitting. I've already told you that. I've already given my eldest boy two chocolates from advent calendars. Pre-7:30.
Yeah, you're definitely
absolutely
legend in your house then.
My kind of breakfast.
yeah, same. It's that time of year, isn't it? Hey, I wanted to say thank you to everybody who's been in contact with us to show us pictures of Straight Outta Cobham on their Spotify Unwrapped. We really appreciate everybody who listens, no matter how you do it. Remember, if you do so via The Athletic, you get all the ads removed. But yeah, that was a nice little ego boost for us all yesterday, so thank you for that. Right, about last night.
Chelsea worked it well to mount here. This is Ziyech! Chelsea regain the lead! First attempt for him since coming on. Hakim Ziyech gets his first Premier League goal of the season.
It was not our day. It's the very first time where I felt that we were not fully ready for this game. So let's take the 3 points, be happy about it and prepare the next game. It was so unusual for us that I don't even know if I want to analyse too much.
Watford 1, Chelsea 2, the game overshadowed by the incident in the first half, which saw a Watford supporter suffer a cardiac arrest. The action halted for more than half an hour while the fan was stabilised and taken to hospital. We'll get to the game shortly. Simon, you were at Vicarage Road, though. Can you tell us a bit more about what happened and the response thereafter?
Well, it was quite extraordinary because it coincided with Messina going down with an injury for Watford. So a lot of attention was being drawn to that in terms of, you know, the general gaze. But it was actually my colleague Adam Lemtel who spotted this incident in the opposite stand away from the press box. And you had a combination of a lot of people with, you know, the yellow bid, Stewarts, etc. They'd clearly spotted something, but you also had the crowd signalling to the players and the referee to try and get their attention. Game was stopped. I think the players spotted it as well. There's a picture of Marcus Alonso actually pointing, you know, and pointing out the situation. And then he had this sort of nervous hush. But the physios of both teams were able to go over there and treat the individual and help out in that regard. And it was what I appreciated was the communication from Watford They had a guy on the PA announcer sort of like telling us what was going on. Of course, the players came off the pitch and we were updated. And there was that, just that nervous sort of wait, obviously. My thoughts, for one, obviously not just for the individual involved, but one of the people I was thinking about was Andreas Christensen, who, of course, was on the pitch when Christian Eriksen suffered cardiac arrest at the Euros. And you were just sort of thinking, well, how is he going to be feeling? You know, is this going to trigger anything? How is he going to come out and play after this? But yeah, thankfully, when it was announced that the individual had been stabilised, of course, carried out on a stretcher, and the game restarted after half an hour. But it felt very, very strange. You were sort of thinking, oh, how can we now talk and write about football after this? But thankfully, the reports sounded quite positive, and obviously my thoughts are with that individual and his friends and family, and hoping they make a speedy recovery.
Yeah, the supporter was stabilised and taken to hospital, which meant that the game could continue. I guess during that break, Sam, obviously we heard that the players wanted to know that the guy was okay before they resumed the match. A lot of it was then about the players getting warm again, but not just physically. I guess mentally there would have been a period of time for them to kind of try and switch their minds back to a football game and be cold about it, which is what they had to do in the situation.
Yeah, there's a tendency to think that footballers are just robots, isn't there? And they can just turn on a switch and perform. So they would have been affected by what they'd seen. Simon's point about Christensen, obviously really valid as well after what he's gone through. And I think just psychologically, you build yourself up, don't you, for a match, for that first whistle, kickoff time at 7:30 last night. So to have that interrupted, to go back into the dressing room and to have witnessed what they did, it's really difficult to get going again. So it was interesting to hear that the players were in dialogue, the management were in dialogue with the officials to make sure that the guy was on the mend, and then they were able to resume. So it was difficult for a number of reasons. Probably gave both managers an opportunity to have a little bit of a team talk during that period and get going from afresh. Not that it did Chelsea too much good, because they were slow out of the blocks again.
Yeah, let's get to the game then. Simon, Thomas Tuchel said it was the worst performance under his reign. Kind of difficult to argue with that, but the beauty of it almost is that they produced that pretty rotten performance and managed to come away with 3 points.
Well, I'm going to slightly turn it around and actually say in some ways it was the best. Worst technically, you know, as a team, etc. But in terms of character, I thought, I've seen many Chelsea title-winning sides. I'm not saying they're going to win the title. But I've seen many title-winning sides deliver that kind of result under those circumstances. It was a crazy, crazy game. You had injuries, it seemed like, every 5 minutes. I mean, there were before the break in play for the fans to get treated, there were 3 injuries in 10 minutes, in the first 10 minutes. It was nuts. I mean, the first half lasted 84 minutes. I mean, it's the craziest game of football, I think, certainly the longest game of football I've ever been involved in. It was 2.5 hours. I was sitting there going, what made me laugh was when, for example, you signed in for the press conference Zoom, and it was scheduled for 9:30 p.m. and it was, I think it was 20 past 10 at that time when I actually logged on. This is an indication of how long it went on. No, Chelsea weren't good. Watford, I thought, did a better job than Manchester United in terms of pressing, but also posing a threat. Chelsea had also made 6 changes, partly because of injuries, without both their first-choice wing-backs. And I just think, yes, we can analyse all the negatives, and there were a lot. Sound niggers. But I think for them to turn around and come away with 3 points, that's got to be massive for their self-belief, particularly when at one point you saw the league table, Liverpool, Man City winning their games, Chelsea dropping to third. You could just imagine the kind of negative chat after if they drop points. The talk would suddenly be, oh, they dropped points against Burnley recently and against Man United. Here's another 2 points dropped. That suddenly people would be going, oh, you know, are Chelsea the real deal? Can they sustain the type of pace? I just thought, in summary, as I said at the start, it was a classic win that champions are made of.
Somebody who did play pretty well, I thought, Sam, was Mason Mount. Obviously, scored one, made the other, kissed his badge, so he's definitely not going to Liverpool. A good night for him.
I thought he was really good, and that was aside from the two goal involvements. Obviously, it was a really well-taken goal and a lovely assist, but I just thought his decision-making in his passing throughout, you know, some horrendous spells for Chelsea when they were, especially early, under big pressure, never really had control of the game, which is so unlike Chelsea. I mean, so wasteful in possession. I looked at the comparisons between last night and the Brentford game, which I thought was quite a good barometer, considering they were both ugly away wins. I think more in keeping with that kind of champions, you know, the necessity to win games like that, I think the Brentford game was. Because last night, I just thought, you know, they were so poor with possession. 30 losses of possession, 22 turnovers. And to see Chelsea just shade possession, sometimes your eyes feel like they're cheating you. But when you look at the stats this morning, in all departments, you know, Watford probably just shaded that game. But going back to Mason, yeah, I thought he was really good. And, you know, I noticed that towards the end of the first half, I don't know if Simon did in the ground, but his position seemed to change from being one of the forward three to being part of a midfield. And I thought that Thomas Tuchel said as much in the press conference, that Ruben Loftus-Cheek was a number six by himself in the second half. And Mason and I think Ziyech towards the end were kind of playing as number eight. So it was the same change they made at Tottenham, to just probably get a bit more control in the midfield and have, latterly it was Havertz and Lukaku as a front two. That's what it looked like to me. But I think because Mason's so adaptable, so technically good, so tactically good, he can make those little changes, whether they're in possession or without the ball. But yeah, that's a big plus, because he's not been himself so far this season. And, you know, I thought he was great in what wasn't a brilliant attacking display last night.
Not brilliant defensively either, but slightly surprising, Simon, to see Andreas Christensen get a start. You'd written for The Athletic about this contract standoff, and Thomas Tuchel, I think to all our surprise, had directly referenced it in his pre-match press conference. So there he was out there. Was that more about Thiago Silva having played so much recently, or was that some kind of mediation between Christensen and Chelsea?
Well, as some of my delightful Twitter responses pointed out, I was under the impression that I was told earlier yesterday that he was being left out again. And I tweeted, much to my regret, like I tweeted that possibility about half an hour before the teams were announced. So inevitably, when the team was announced and he wasn't, I got bombarded with delightful comments from some people. But yes, it was a deliberate decision to try and rest Silva. But of course, that backfired because the performance was so bad in the first half. He was brought on in the second half. The reaction from the Chelsea fans when he came out to warm up at half time, you know, the Chelsea fans just like treated him like this saviour, you know, to come and save the day. And he was typical. But back to Christensen. I've basically written a piece that questions not only sort of Tuchel's treatment of him, but why people have such an issue with Christensen wanting to ask for what he's worth. There's this big sort of, oh, but he's reneged on two agreements. Well, no, because nothing was actually ever signed. Sam will know this better than me, but you know, a player when he's in contract negotiations has a right to change his mind and ask for this, ask for that. Just because we're sort of making it public, this is fairly common for these sort of things to happen. Oh, I want this, the club say this, da da da. It's just that, unfortunately, us journalists are sort of being able to talk about the situation, say, oh, this has been agreed, now it's changed, blah, blah, blah. And it's just muddied the water somewhat. And for Tuchel to sort of make out that, oh, that means that Christensen doesn't mean what he says when he says, oh, I want to stay at Chelsea and I love Chelsea and all this kind of stuff, I just think he's out of order, really. It's just like, well, when he's in contract negotiations, is he just taking the offer that Chelsea make him, or is he making counter offers himself? Also, you sort of think, well, is this the way it's going to be from now on, that if a player doesn't agree to what the club are offering, that you leave them out the side? What kind of message does that send? And another point is, why is Rudiger not being treated in exactly the same way? Because he's actually even further away from signing a new contract. There's been this argument put out there that's, oh, well, Rudiger hasn't flip-flopped like Christensen has, that his stance has been consistent in that he's not signing anything. I just find that a baffling argument to make out that, oh, yeah, you know, Rudiger can continue to start and Christensen be punished. Back to Christensen's performance, though, I thought in the circumstances with the spotlight clearly on him, I thought he played really well. And not just in the first half when he played in Silva's position, but when he moved to the right next to Silva. And I just thought he underlined why Chelsea should go out of their way to come to a compromise. I hasten to add, they are still in talks, all this negative chat, and they are talking about a new deal. So I just think people should sort of realise that just because a player wants to stay at Chelsea doesn't mean that they should sell themselves short. He's on a significant smaller wage than players that are probably delivering a lot less on the pitch.
The other thing in play here as well is that the representative will be doing the agent will be doing the majority of the talking, and
yeah,
and just Christensen will just want to play football, you know. But his agent, his representatives will know exactly what type of money the rest of the guys are on, what he's worth, and what they want to get out of this deal as well. So it takes a bold character. It takes a certain degree of maturity that you maybe don't get to the end of your career where you say, actually, I just want to get this signed. I just want to play football, you know, go back to what we were previously offered or whatever and get it signed. So I think there's a number of things in play here, and you know, I'm sure that Andreas Christensen just wants to play football, essentially.
Well, one defender who did sign a contract earlier this season was Trevor Chalobah. As Simon pointed out in his piece, those negotiations far, far simpler. But he picked up what looked like quite a nasty injury last night, Simon. What did Tuchel have to say about that in his press conference?
The most indication I got, I mean, he sort of said on the TV broadcast that he was worried about it. One of the radio interviews, not that I heard it, but I spoke to one of the people that interviewed Tuchel, who asked the question directly, said that he thinks it's a bad one. That was the words that were conveyed to me secondhand. And by a bad one, you sort of think, oh, that could be quite a few weeks out, which is a blow, because Chalobah has become a very reliable member of that back line. And of course, was moved into midfield when Silva came on. But again, perhaps as Liam pointed out on Twitter, that perhaps this is also a consequence of Tuchel's game management as far as Christensen's concerned, because of course Christensen's been left out as a punishment and Chalobah has benefited in that he's played every game, but perhaps four games in 11 days has pushed his body to the max and he pulled up a hamstring. It was actually could have been a double punishment, because when he pulled up with the injury, it was actually at the start of the Watford counter that led to Mendy making a save at the 35-yard mark with his knee. Tremendous save. I thought, oh no, he's going to get sent off, isn't he? He's handled it. but never in doubt, the Yashin Trophy non-award winner making the difference. But no, Chalobah being out is yet another injury problem. They're starting to mount up and... not ideal when December is such a busy month for Chelsea.
Yeah, thank God that chance went to Tom Cleverley. You didn't think for a moment he was actually going to score, did you? If it had been Emmanuel Dennis, it might have been something different. Well, anyway, Chelsea got the win, Liverpool and City winning too. So it's as you were at the top. The Blues a point clear of City ahead of the game against West Ham on Saturday. Before we get to our preview of that match and the FA Cup final, at the Ballon d'Or Awards on Tuesday night, Chelsea won Best Club, whilst Jorginho and Sam Kerr finished third in the men's and women's Best Player categories. Edouard Mendy came second in the Lev Yashin Award for Best Keeper. Simon, it's nice to win Club of the Year, I guess. I thought the footage of Tuchel and Emma Hayes and Marina Granovskaya and some of the players watching the ceremony all suited and booted was quite sweet. Is there much more to say on it than that?
Yeah, I was a bit hurt I wasn't invited. I think I would have looked incredibly dapper. No, actually,
Would Versace have done you a suit as well, Simon?
I would have really lowered the standard if I'd been that. No, I mean, it's obviously nice. I sort of think that far too much is made of awards sometimes, particularly the Ballon d'Or. And although I do have great sympathy for everything that Mendy and his camp have said, one about his admission from the shortlist, it was a joke. And look, Donnarumma is a good goalkeeper, but I thought what Mendy achieved in his first season at Chelsea, winning the Champions League, the clean sheets, etc., etc., it was a nonsensical vote as far as I'm concerned. But I think, as Tuchel points out on a regular basis when he's asked about it, he downplays the significance of awards. He sort of says it's all about the team. And for him, it's all about trophy. You know, like what the best award as far as a football, I'm sure Sam would agree, would be to have a winner's medal rather than a personal accolade, which is nice on the mantelpiece, but a real sort of great sort of reminder of what you've achieved in your career is what you've done with your teammates, not what you've done as an individual.
It feels like the Ballon d'Or, I know it's been around for a long time, but it's almost exclusively at the moment just for Ronaldo and Messi to try and outdo each other as much as anything else. Yeah, the best club thing, Sam, I do quite like that because the club part of that is quite important, isn't it? It's if they just said, oh, we'll give it to Chelsea because they won the Champions League, well, fine. But it is about the women's team as well, isn't it? And the kind of integration between those two teams to make one club, if that's not an incredibly cheesy thing to say.
No, absolutely. And enormous credit to the strides that have been made by Emma Hayes and the women's team. Yeah, I don't think that they probably even get in the conversation if they hadn't gone so deep in the Champions League and won the WSL. So it's the collective. It's also the element of Thomas Tuchel coming to Chelsea after a difficult period and hitting the ground running, probably combined with the influx of the academy players that have become mainstays of the side. I think that's another ingredient, definitely. But I suppose the women's team have progressed so far in the last 5 years. That Champions League final, yes, it ended in defeat, but that was a culmination of what's gone on. Better players come in and improve in that squad. But yeah, I mean, it's an award for everyone, isn't it? And yeah, I think the collective can be really proud of what's happened over the last 12 months, and it's a reward for that.
Well, the award that Chelsea want more than any other this season is the Premier League title. Their next step to try and securing that comes at the London Stadium on Saturday. We'll look ahead to that game next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
West Ham versus Chelsea is a 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. Thomas Tuchel, not that thrilled about that, given what his players have been through in midweek. In spite of that, though, Simon, it feels to me like this is actually quite a good time to be playing West Ham because their form has tailed off quite spectacularly in the last few weeks. They had a win in Europe, but lost two of their last three and pegged back in the last minute at home by Brighton midweek.
Yeah, but I just think I'd still be wary about sort of thinking West Ham are there for the taking. I think that they have been a very good side under David Moyes. He's done a remarkable job there, and they will be looking forward to taking Chelsea on, especially if they, when they watch that tape of the Watford match, they'll be playing with. They'll sort of think, right, if we can play with similar intensity, we can unnerve Chelsea. Yeah, this is going to be a real cracking game, I think, even though it is a lunchtime kickoff. Yeah, I with Antonio not sort of, well, he almost scored but didn't score against Brighton. He's gone through a bit of a drought. They're quite reliant on him, but that always makes me nervous because I just sort of think, well, he might end that drought against Chelsea when in a game that his fans will really want him to break that drought.
Good to get another away game quickly in the bank, Sam, just to try and shake off what happened at Watford, I suppose. But given the amount of injuries that Chelsea have got, there's going to be more selection headaches for Thomas Tuchel here. Is this the game that we finally see Romelu Lukaku starting, do you think?
Quite possibly, yeah. And then you look at the bench last night, it'll probably come down to whether Jorginho's fit enough to come straight back in. Hudson-Odoi, on reflection, was that the game to rest him for? Maybe could have done with him last night, given the form that he's been in. So he probably comes straight back into the reckoning, which we wouldn't have been saying a month or two ago. So, there's good options. It's a massive game, of course, always against West Ham. I don't think they'll be as bad defensively as Watford were in moments. And obviously they've got huge threats going the other way. But as Simon says, as Simon rightly says, They're not in form right now, and that's the same with Benrahma, the same with Bowen. I think Bowen's underlying stats are probably the best out of that trio right now, in that he's still getting in the positions, but they've tailed off enormously. So probably a good time to be playing them, although this is a better side than Watford. They've got considerable threat from set pieces, if Creswell's back in the lineup as well. So it'll be a tough game, but I expect this to be a much different Chelsea, especially if one or two of those injuries can come back and he can shuffle the pack.
One West Ham player that is in form, of course, is remaining form, is Declan Rice. It's the Declan Rice derby. Of course, the player that Chelsea have long been linked with, Frank Lampard wanted him. I'm told that Thomas Tuchel is a big admirer of him. But he's got a ridiculous price tag. He signed this stupid contract, which means he's got still, I think, 2 or 3 years left on his contract. Then I think there's an option for another year. It's a crazy, crazy contract. So he's got this ridiculous sort of transfer valuation of over £100 million. West Ham have got all the power. And unless sort of Declan Rice agitates for a move, and we saw how well that went for our Harry Kane last summer, I can't see him going anywhere for now, which is great news for West Ham because he's so instrumental to them. But if you're one of his admirers, like a Chelsea or Man United, you're going to be frustratingly sort of thinking, oh, that's the player that can really boost their midfield for many years to come. But he's a bit out of our price range.
Sam, this is very unathletic, but here's a totally fictitious piece of transfer nonsense that I'm going to ask you about. If there was the option for Chelsea and West Ham to do a swap deal, say, we'll give you a few quid and you can have Conor Gallagher and Billy Gilmore and we'll get Declan Rice, would you do that?
No, I wouldn't. I'm a huge admirer of Declan Rice and I haven't always been. I didn't see it. You know, covering West Ham games when he first broke into the side, invariably there'd have been cup competitions, but I just didn't see it at all. And then I think the progression in the last year has been incredible. And I don't think I said it on this podcast, but last week I was championing Reece James as the best player in the country right now. Possibly not true after the Man United game, maybe Salah now. But the only other player in that conversation at this moment is Declan Rice, I would say. Because I think when I've seen him live this season, he's been incredible. It's been a couple of games when he's not given the ball away, very progressive with his passing, playing forward, looks the complete midfielder. That said, love Conor Gallagher. Absolutely think he's been a breath of fresh air the last couple of seasons, his low moves. He should get an opportunity at some point. You know, he's not probably going to go straight into the midfield regularly next year, but he should be around it, given his consistency. And Billy Gilmore as well. I worried about his physicality when I first saw him, obviously, but because his brain is so sharp and his feet are so good, no concerns at all. When he got that little run of games, he was outstanding. So hopefully he's not going to be too put back, I suppose, by this loan spell, which is going to be, you know, tricky for him, I suppose, on occasion. But no, I think we're well positioned in that area. I wouldn't want to get rid of those two.
I think either of them would probably get a game now if they were on the books. Before we move on from West Ham, Simon, we've spoken a lot about defenders today. Kurt Zouma facing Chelsea for the first time. There's somebody with a lot of motivation for this match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point, Matt. Yeah, I mean, he had to leave because he could clearly see that his chances of regular first-team football was unlikely. Like, he'd obviously come in every now and then, but he wants to be playing every week. Chelsea also saw it as an opportunity to bring some money in. He was always one of the most saleable assets that they had. And it's been a good move for him. He's been playing well for West Ham. And I think he scored his first goal from a set piece quite recently. Because Chelsea fans know fully how dangerous he can be. He always seemed to... there was never any doubt about his ability in the air. So I'd suggest that Chelsea, in an attacking sense, aim crosses away from him on Saturday. And when it comes to defending set pieces, make sure he's well marked.
12:30 kickoff for that one on Saturday. And we will, of course, react to it in Monday's show. But next today, we've got an FA Cup final to look ahead to. On Sunday, Chelsea and Arsenal meet at Wembley in the 2020 FA Cup final. The tournament was postponed for obvious reasons, but it's perfectly timed now because it's the top two teams in the country going at it. Joining us to look ahead to the match is a legend of both clubs. She's captained Arsenal and Chelsea to success in this competition in previous years. It's Katie Chapman.
And there it is. The first Wembley winners of the Women's FA Cup are Chelsea. And they have their first piece of major silverware in their history. Emma Hayes has done it. She has led Chelsea to the FA Cup. And in the first Wembley final, it will be Chelsea's name in history as the first to win it here.
Katie, this is the FA Cup in association with Katie Chapman in a lot of ways, isn't it? Because you won it 10 times as a player. Your 10th was against Arsenal when you captained Chelsea. It's a competition, clearly, which you hold very dear. And this final looks like one of the most mouth-watering we've had in years, with clearly the best two teams in the country at the moment going at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the FA Cup has always been the one that you want to play in, the trophy you want to compete for. And I think, having the opportunity now as a female to play at Wembley Stadium, why wouldn't you? And I think always with Chelsea and Arsenal, the rivalry between them two teams, obviously they're battling it out in the league. It's going to be a great game.
And they're playing it, they've scheduled it this weekend, I believe, because it's the 100th anniversary of when the FA banned women from playing football. So it just shows like the about turn of the sport, obviously over that period, but really over the last 10 to 15 years. What was it, 2015, when you captained Chelsea at Wembley in this competition?
Yeah, for the first game at Wembley, yeah. And I remember that so prominently in my mind. It was a great occasion. I remember walking into the stadium thinking, wow, like having the opportunity to play, the home of English football was something special.
In terms of the two teams this season, Arsenal beat Chelsea in the league earlier in the campaign. They are much improved, aren't they, under Jonas Edervall, it would seem?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at this squad of players, they've got an unbelievable squad of players at Arsenal. And, they've always been a great team. They've not been sort of in and around it recently, but they've always been up there competing. And this season looks really exciting. They're going to be the team to compete with Chelsea.
Do you think the international break this week will affect things at all? Because obviously it means that both managers have had less time with their players.
Absolutely. I think that was the problem as well at the start of the season. They were all coming off international break then as well at the start of the season in that game. And I think it showed. It shows some tiredness between, I think, both teams in that game as well. So I think it's going to play, a big part in this game. But, it's the FA Cup and, who wins the trophy. So I'm sure they'll have all eyes on the game.
Katie, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Emma Hayes. You obviously worked with her over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a difference in her over those years? I mean, obviously now she's, as a pundit, brilliant tactically. I've had the opportunity to speak to her a few times and you would think she's very forward thinking as a coach. Was there a time when she was more about one-on-one relationships, a bit more, I suppose, not volatile, but a bit old school in the way that she led? Or has she always been very forward thinking?
she's always been very forward thinking, very open to learning and learning new things, trying, you know, she's not scared to try different tactics or a different formation or that sort of stuff. She'll change it when she feels like it's right to change it. And she always believes in change. I think working, I've seen her develop, you know, from being the assistant at Arsenal to going and playing under at Chicago and then obviously at Chelsea, you know, she always says that she learns. And when she got fired in Chicago, you know, that was the biggest thing for her, you know, because it's not all plain sailing. You've got to work for things. And sometimes it's really, really difficult. And, you know, I think it shows now that she is one of the best, you know, female coaches in the world.
Hey, Katie, you're talking just there about Emma learning. What do you think she would have learned from that opening day defeat against Arsenal? And in terms of the FA Cup being at stake, could there also have connotations with the league in terms of whoever wins this will have a psychological advantage going forward?
I think from the first game of the season, she's learnt she's not going to lose again. and I think, you know, in their first few games as well, they conceded quite a few goals. And I know that Emma prides on not conceding. So I think she, you know, has rectified that now because they've not conceded in, I don't know how many games it is now. And you know what? The FA Cup's a really hard one because, you know, it is a knockout tournament, is it? Everyone gets the opportunity to play in it and anything can happen on the day. You know, you've got to be the best prepared and hope that your team sort of goes out there ready to, you know, win the game, and the occasion pulls them through that and the fans. But yeah, it's hard to say. I think, yeah, another win obviously for Arsenal will give them, you know, massive confidence going into the league, won't it? So yeah.
Katie, we often talk about Frank Kirby and Sam Kerr as the key players for Chelsea. There'll be a lot of our listeners who will be watching this game who maybe don't watch the women's team that much. Who else should they be looking out for in the Chelsea lineup?
You know, I think at the moment who's playing really well is Jessie Fleming and Erin Cuthbert. I mean, they're, you know, didn't start, they haven't played much football within the team, but they've been given the chance and they've taken their opportunity. And I think you've seen them, you know, cropping up with goals. Melly Leopolds as well, I think, is one that goes understated sometimes in that midfield. She does all the doggy work. And sometimes I'm like, you know, that's what I used to be. I used to be that person, you know, like quite understated. You'd work really hard in the centre of the park and not really get that much acknowledgement. So I think she's one that needs, yeah, to speak about.
Before we let you go, give us a prediction, please.
My prediction's 2-1 Chelsea. Do you know what? I hope for the neutral that we see like lots of goals, because I think if you look at both teams, both squads, you know, there's a lot of potential for goals within them, or there's not. It depends. But I'm sure, you know, it's going to be a great game of football. And I'm really excited because I'm going to be sitting there with my kids as a fan. You know, for one, I want to be playing, of course, but I'm excited to go and sit and watch as a fan.
Well, I hope you have a great day. Obviously, it's going to be even greater if Chelsea win. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
No, you're welcome. No problem. Take care.
Arsenal versus Chelsea in the FA Cup final gets underway at 2 o'clock on Sunday. If you're in the UK, you can watch it on the BBC. If you're not, you can watch it with me.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, former Chelsea player John Sillett passed away earlier this week at the age of 85. He played over 100 games for the Blues, was part of the Ted Drake team christened Drake's Ducklings in the late 50s. As a manager, Sillett would lead Coventry to the FA Cup in 1987. We now know that Chelsea's first game at the Club World Cup will be against one of Al Hilal, Al Jazeera or Auckland City at the semi-final stage. The date yet to be confirmed, the tournament takes place between the 3rd and 12th of February. It means Chelsea's Premier League games against Brighton and Arsenal have been postponed. Simon, that means it's going to be nearly a month between Premier League games for Chelsea. That's an interesting little wrinkle into the title race.
Yeah, and obviously it's going to lead to massive fixture congestion which, you know, may give the edge to Liverpool and Man City during the run-in. But this is the price of success, isn't it? You know, if you're going to win Champions Leagues and being FIFA Club World Cups, you know, it's not the worst place to be. But I would say that could be a significant factor, you know, especially if this run of injuries continues. Although they may appreciate playing in some warmer weather for a week, you know, it's like a little unofficial, you know, tour to the Middle East. But yeah, it's just frustrating, isn't it? I know people say, oh, it's snobbery and we have to include teams from other associations. But really, to have like this second round, then Chelsea playing limited opposition to play what's going to be Palmeiras in the final, let's be honest. It just seems an unnecessary amount of time for what really should just be a one-off game.
Sam, I was going to suggest that Chelsea maybe just send the kids to this, but actually Simon's just convinced me there that a week or two's warm weather training might be quite a nice sell for the first team squad, no? Just get out of bleak old England in January and do a bit of training and have a little kick about in a game that if you win it, brilliant. If not, nobody's really going to be that bothered.
Yeah, it's a bit of a luxury, isn't it? Getting an opportunity mid-season to recuperate. I don't think sending the kids would go down particularly well, Matt. Across the globe, I think they'd get a hell of a lot of stick for that. I mean, it'd be lovely for the supporters to be the best team in the world, and for the players probably for a period. But I think that's where it stops. I agree with Simon. I just think if last night's an example of how stretched the squad can become and how difficult some of these tricky Premier League fixtures will be, if you haven't got your bigger hitters, then there can be some precarious weeks ahead in the new year. That said, Liverpool are going to have to contend with maybe losing Salah and Mane for a period of time. But yeah, I think it makes it tricky for Chelsea to go all the way if the fixtures are going to be stacked up.
But I think Chelsea should go all out to win this. They had a chance. It's a trophy that's very hard to win because you have to win the Champions League to do it. And of course, they fluffed their lines in 2012 with the mighty Rafa Benitez at the helm, who's currently having a whale of a time at Everton.
Blue doesn't suit him, does it, Rafa, basically? That's what we've learned.
Well, I think he thinks any colour suits himself. But leaving my personal opinion aside, I think you know it's important that Chelsea sort of like they did with the Super Cup, you know, go all out to win it. It's certainly going all that way. You don't want to come back having lost. It could actually, you know, flipping the coin here, winning that trophy, a bit like if you win the League Cup at that time of the season, can actually give you that confidence boost, that bit of momentum going to the run-in. So it's twofold. Yes, it's a difficult timing, but it could, on the other side of things, actually give an injection of self-belief.
Yeah, we'll find that out in February. In terms of the academy development squads, etc., Chelsea progressed to the third round of the EFL Trophy after overcoming Forest Green Rovers on Tuesday night. After a 1-1 draw, the Blues won the subsequent penalty shootout. It's the first time they've reached that stage of the competition since 2018-19. Many of those players will be involved in the PL2 game away to Derby on Friday night. You can watch that with Sam on Chelsea's online platforms. The under-18s host Arsenal at Cobham on Saturday morning. Right, after 2 weeks' worth of flawless quizzing from our contestants, I've had a long, hard look at myself and concocted what I believe are 6 questions which are a level above previous ones in terms of difficulties. Let's see how the chaps get on. All the questions relate to Chelsea and West Ham in some form or fashion. Simon, extraordinary performance from you last week. You're up first here. Let's see if you can maintain it.
No.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
Wait, where's Lucy's dad? Bring him in.
Lucy's dad made a guest appearance earlier and was very proud of the fact that he got Frodo Grodas the other week. So I'm interested to see how he gets on with these. Right, Simon, here you go. Who scored one of his 2 Chelsea goals in the 2-1 defeat at Upton Park in March 1998?
Brutal.
Yeah, it is brutal because you've been too good at it.
1998.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Only played 13 games on loan, second half of 97-98. There's a clue.
Oh.
You're still not going to get it, so.
Oh, well, thank you, Matt, for that. Rightful lack of confidence. I'm already going to concede.
Well, Parkin looks puzzled. There is an opportunity to steal if you'd like.
Well, I would have been around, wouldn't I? So, who wasn't very good and used to come and train with the reserves? Oh, what was the Italian guy's name? Oh, I can only think of one of the Scandies. I'm going to go for Jess Hogg.
Ooh, it's not great, a bad shout.
Random. That's up there with Frode Grodas, isn't it?
I'm afraid you're at the wrong part of Europe. Well, the answer we were looking for was the Frenchman Laurent Charvet. Played 13 games on loan.
Never in a million years.
equally as obscure. And did train with the reserves a lot.
Laurent Charvet. Oh, my word. I haven't heard his name since 1998, I don't think.
Sam, we're back to more modern times for your first question. Who got sent off in the game between West Ham and Chelsea at the London Stadium last season?
Blimey.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
Give me 98. it was a centre-half, wasn't it? That was a West Ham centre-half.
You're trying to lead me to give you a clue and I'm not...
No, it was. It was, but I can't think of his name. Yeah, I got it. Balbuena.
I'm going to give you that, you know. I don't know where you pulled it from. It would be nice to have a first name if you have one, but...
No. I knew it was one of the... I knew it was Diop or Balbuena.
It was Fabian Balbuena. You're right. Would you have got that, Simon?
No.
No. Okay, well, let's see if you get this. In March 2008, Chelsea won 4-0 against West Ham at Upton Park. At half-time, it was 3-0, despite Chelsea having had a player sent off. Name at least two of the three goal scorers and the player dismissed.
Oh... Balak.
Balak is correct.
Right, another goal scorer. So I go Frank or Joe. Got a feeling Joe Cole scored that day.
Joe Cole did indeed score. So all we're looking for now is the player who got sent off.
That's the. Can I get a half point just for the goal scorers?
Nope.
That's brutal. Oh, crikey. I don't know. Defender. This. Carvalho.
It was Frank Lampard, who was also the goal scorer.
Yeah. Damn it.
Hard luck. Right, Sam, question number two for you. In 1975, Chelsea won 1-0 at Upton Park. The goal scorer that day was once described by the Times newspaper as 6'4" of hardcore centre-back who had an unsentimental way with a headed clearance. Name that hardcore centre-back.
That's the year I was born.
1970. It's a lovely line that, though, isn't it? An unsentimental way with a headed clearance.
I'm going to get it. I'm going to know it as soon as... I think Simon will get this and I'll know it as soon... Because I've... It's there. I know there was a tough centre-half during that period. It's going to
quite a famed tough centre-half.
Yeah.
Our friend Clive Walker always bangs on about it.
Yeah, anyways. I know. All I can think is Joey Jones. That's all I've got in my head. But I don't even know where Joey Jones played. I don't even know if he featured for Chelsea. But it's that era... Oh, is it like a muck? Something muck? I can't get it.
Simon, can you steal?
Mickey Droy?
Mickey Droy is right.
No. Yes, that was him.
Frode Grodas.
That was him. I knew Mickey Droy.
I think you just set me up on the volley there, Sam, as soon as you went muck.
Oh, it's one all with one question each to play. Maybe not quite the same level of answering, but certainly a thrilling competition. Final question for you, Simon. If he features on Saturday, it will be the 19th time Cesar Azpilicueta has faced West Ham as a Chelsea player.
According to the stats website, Transfermarkt, how many of his 18 appearances against the Hammers so far has he been captain for?
Almost swore then. How do you come up with this stuff, honestly?
It takes hours and a vast team of researchers that I employ at my own personal expense.
Does this take longer than everything else?
Yes, it quite often does. I started it on Monday. It's Thursday now.
Wow. How many times has he been captain? Well, let me figure this out. He obviously only took the armband officially a couple of years ago.
You did really well with this style of question last week when it was how many goals did Edding score against Man United, so I think you can do it.
I might go for the same answer, five.
Five is absolutely correct.
Oh, what?
Right, five is my lottery number.
All right, so it's 2-1, so you've got to get this then, Sam. Final question. Where was N'Golo Kanté listed in the Ballon d'Or top 30 rankings?
I've looked at this morning. I think he was fifth as well.
It's absolutely correct.
Oh,
2-2 is the final score. That was really high standard. I was going to ask what number did Mason come, but then you were asked about that on Chelsea TV last night, so I had to change it.
It's 19th, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, same as his squad number. Oh, well done, guys. That was great. I feel a bit better because you both got one wrong, and you two should feel good about yourself because you both got two right. So everybody's a winner, really.
Well, I'm taking a moral victory because that's the only kind of victory I can get on this quiz. Because like Newcastle, I still haven't got a win. But I got those two goal scorers, so there you go. I'm Sam, you know, forgive me.
I want half a point for saying Joey Jones on the podcast because I've just looked him up and he did, in fact,
never played for Chelsea, did he?
78 times, mate, at left did back he? Between wow. 82 and 85. So there you go. So
I thought you were going to say quiz. Half a point for saying Mook.
Hey, Mickey Droy goes into the Frodo Grode Ass Hall of Fame. I think we can say that with some certainty. Right, before we go, Simon, can you tantalise listeners who aren't currently subscribers to The Athletic with tales of your current and upcoming agenda?
I can tell you about a piece I've sort of written this morning, which is about Ziyech. Who put in yet another classic Ziyech display off the bench at Watford. And I tweeted, and I've pretty much written what I've tweeted. He baffles me. He can just do the worst things and then be influential like he was with the goal. So I just sort of done a bit of a U-turn on what I wrote in October, where I was sort of saying, oh, you know, he's running out of time to prove himself. And now I'm sort of saying he's despite his flaws, he's showing he is valuable and should stick around, not be sold in January. There is a big piece in the pipeline, but I can't tell you about it. It's game dependent, is okay. All I can say.
Well, that's a good reason for people to sign up so they can read it. Briefly, Sam, before we go, Ziyech, we hardly mentioned him there in our Watford chat. That was some finish. And actually, when he came on, Chelsea looked a bit more stable, even though he was in a kind of slightly funky, unusual position, as were most of the players by the end of the game.
Yeah, he was just fitting people in, really, wasn't he, towards the end? And we're not going to see all those players on the pitch. I remember the start of the season was, how's he going to choose three of this plethora of options he's got, and then all of a sudden you had, I think, five or maybe even six of the forward players on the pitch in tandem last night. So yeah, I mean, he gave the ball away a few times early, but when you got that quality on the pitch, that was liable to happen, even though it was not a good performance, not a great night as a spectacle. Ziyech popped up, brilliant finish. So yeah, he comes into the reckoning for the weekend, definitely.
Yep, we'll see if he starts against West Ham. We'll be reacting to that game in Monday's pod, of course. We'll also be looking ahead to the final group stage game of the Champions League against Zenit. Until then, though, many thanks to Simon, to Sam, to Katie Chapman for joining us earlier, to Lucy and her dad, and mainly to you, listener. We'll speak to you again on Monday. Bye for now.
The Athletic.